Hello and welcome to Behind the Bar Show. I'm your host, Mr. Martini. This week's topic is whiskey, part one. We'll go through how it's made, some drink history, interesting facts about Jack Daniel's and Maker's Mark, and a few other jewels of information as well. During a break, we'll feature another famous quote, this time from Henny Youngman. So pour yourself a whiskey cocktail, sit back, and enjoy the show. Hello again, everyone, and here we are ready to talk about whiskey. Now, I've really been looking forward to this episode. Actually, this is only going to be part one of two parts, mainly because there's so much to talk about when it comes to whiskey that I figured I better break it up into two different episodes. So here's how I plan on doing it. On this episode, we're going to get into the whiskey intro, as well as talk about American and Canadian whiskey. Starting next week, I'll go over Irish and Scottish whiskey. But before we get into that, I think it's time to go into listener feedback. This first one is a comment I received on my website at behindthebarshow.blogspot.com, and it comes from Axel. It states, "Mr. Martini, I'm a new bartender in Daytona Beach and love your podcast. I'm learning a lot about the liquors, and some of my older clients like to hear the history that goes along with the recipes. Thanks, and keep up the good work." Thanks, Axel. I really appreciate the message. Just to let you know that I had no idea how big this podcast is going to become. I started it thinking it was going to be just a fun little hobby. And before I know it, 3 weeks later, I have close to 700 subscribers. So it's messages like this that definitely keep me fired up about doing the show, and I highly appreciate it. So good luck with your bartending career. Next is an email from Mark, who said the sound quality of my vodka podcast was a huge improvement. I completely agree. I'm happy I finally bought this new microphone. I think it came out really well. I'm still having to use, the mic boost on my computer to make it sound loud enough, but I'm working on that. I have a preamp on order. Thank you, Brian, from The Frank Truth, for recommending the preamp. That's the one I'm going to go with. And Mark also mentioned that whiskey is his favorite liquor and mentioned how the oh-so-common phrase water of life fits into whiskey. Don't worry, Mark, I'm definitely going to be getting to that, and I appreciate the email. Now, I also received an email from Steven, who emailed me some really good questions I'd like to get into. His first question was, what does higher-priced vodka get you over a lower-priced vodka? Now, I'm going to try to answer this without taking too much time, or otherwise we won't have enough time to get into whiskey, because this is an unbelievable question. I currently think that when it comes to vodka, the one thing you want to stay away from is the really, really cheap vodka. I mean, the ones with a name you've never heard of, or maybe even a nameless vodka that's made in Timbuktu somewhere, mainly because you don't know what kind of water quality is being used to dilute the vodka to make it potable. When you get into the higher-priced vodkas, a lot of them are pretty much the same. They all deal with the same types of using pure water. Sky, for instance, claims that they're the only ones who do reverse osmosis on their water, trying to make sure it's 100% pure. So really, when it comes to the different types of vodkas, it all depends on what kind of mash it was made out of, how many times it's distilled, as well as how they filter it, and the water quality that they use. So really, you can find some excellent vodkas in the mid-range price. I highly recommend just going with, a mid-range vodka when you're making mixed drinks. You need to use a top-shelf vodka when doing some drinks that are made with a lot of mixers, because you basically want something neutral in alcohol anyways. When you're dealing with something like a vodka martini, you may want to definitely have a nice high-quality vodka, something that you enjoy the taste of, because like I said in the vodka episode, some vodkas do have very minute differences in flavor, and so just try the ones you like. I highly recommend it. If you're ever in Las Vegas, go to the Red Square. Now, this is a vodka bar that's located in Mandalay Bay. I highly recommend it. The actual bar is frozen ice on top of the bar, and they have a huge selection of vodkas, as well as lots of different tasting flights of vodkas that I highly recommend you try. That way you can actually have four different types of vodkas. You can taste each one of them. They're ice cold. And you can actually tell the small differences in each one. So it's a great way to start to gain that taste. But let's go on to the next question. I don't want to spend too much time on this one. Stephen also mentioned about the flavored vodkas. Yes, I didn't actually mention those. I'm actually thinking later on, and maybe some later episode, I'm going to do a full episode on flavored vodkas and some of the drinks you can make with them. So mainly the vodka episode, I just wanted to focus on the specific brands, what they're made out of, where they're made from, and that type of information. So I believe the other question that Stephen had was, the gin and tonic. My gin and tonic recipe had 2.5 ounces of gin, while the rest of my highball drinks had 1.5 ounce, and he was curious as to why that was. The main reason is because the gin and tonic doesn't have much else in it, just the gin and the tonic. The whole drink is to really focus on the gin. And the other recipes I gave that go into a highball glass also have lots of different types of mixers included. So when it comes to gin and tonic, I use a 2.5 ounces. And actually, I'll tell you, I've noticed a few websites. If you go look up gin and tonic recipes, you'll find some recipes that are a lot stronger than that. I found the Food Network, I think it has like over 3 ounces of gin to 4 ounces of tonic. I think that's a bit much. So that's the reason why I went with 2.5 ounces, considering it's mainly just gin and tonic, and the other ones actually had mixers. Last but not least, I want to give a shout out to Brad Z from The Brad Z Show, presented by Priestess TV. This was the first ever voice letter I've received, so I'd like to share it here. If I can just take a quick moment of your time, take it out. This is also to be a plug for The Brad Z Show, which you can find on iTunes as Priestess TV. So here it is.
Hey, Mr. Martini, this is Brad from Priestess TV. We really enjoy your show. Just wanted to give you some feedback. I just listened to the vodka show, which I think you put up yesterday. Really enjoyed it. I've been quite a fan of vodka for many years, and I really enjoy my martinis. I wanted to throw out a couple extra vodkas that you might find interesting. One is coincidentally named the same thing as my website, which is Precise Vodka. This is a Swedish vodka actually made from corn, and it's kind of in a new entry in the super ultra-premium vodka arena, and I think for a lot of us who drink martinis, the real taste of these vodkas is really important to us. So Precise Vodka, I really recommend. As I said, it's made from corn. There's also a couple of interesting ones made from grapes. One is from a producer of wine called Roth, and they're up in Napa Valley somewhere. And what I think they do is they take their grapes, their extra grapes that they make from their wine, and they turn it into a vodka. And this is a new release. There's another one also, a French one called, I believe it's pronounced Ciroc, C-I-R-O-C. That comes from France, and that's also made from grapes. So keep up the good work. We really enjoy your show. We're trying to do some stuff over at Precise TV, all based on wine and travel and books and food and whatnot. We're actually doing vodcasts. And if you're interested in checking us out, come on over to PreciseTV.com. That's PreciseTV.com. Take care.
Thank you, Brad Z from Precise TV. Now, those are some vodkas I have not tried, and so I will definitely give those a shot. And I wish you luck on your podcast as well. So there was quite a few other messages I've received, but unfortunately I can't get to everybody, or if I did, you know, I wouldn't have enough time to talk about whiskey, and I notice we're already coming up on the 10-minute mark here shortly. So I'm going to go ahead and leave it at that and just say thank you to everyone else that I didn't mention. Now, before we actually get into whiskey, I'd like to mention the horrible job I did last week on the Water of Life in Russian. Now, I've been working on this pronunciation because if you heard it last week, I did quite a bad job with it, and I'll completely admit it. I don't speak Russian, so I'm trying here, folks. Thank you to Tanya for helping me get this right. But Water of Life is Zhizna Voda. You know, I kept saying Voda last time because it's... If you see how people type it in English letters, they use V-O-D-A, and it's all saying Voda, but actually it's Vada with emphasis on the da part. So now with that said, let me try, you know, actually, I'm not going to try this one. I was going to get into the name whiskey, which comes from Gaelic. I'm not going to try it. It's spelled U-I-S-G-E space B-E-A-T-H-A, and it means, want to guess? Water of life. Now, since I just mentioned I'm not going to try pronouncing it, because you already know how bad I am pronouncing things, let me actually give you a recording that I found on bbc.co.uk that gives the pronunciations of a bunch of Gaelic words, and they happen to have whiskey on there. And so here is what they say it is.
Ishkabir.
Okay, that was a lot easier than me trying to say it myself. Whiskey is distilled from grains, basically corn, rye, wheat, and barley. Now, it could be just one of those or all of those, depending on what type of whiskey it is. We'll be getting into that later. Whiskey pretty much starts out as beer before it is distilled. The stills used to distill whiskey have a wide base, and they get smaller at the top, which they turn into a tube, then spirals downwards. Usually, this spiraling tube is covered by cold water that allows the alcohol vapors to turn back into a liquid and drip into a catch basin. Now, that's how they actually distill the whiskey. And at this point, it's still not legally whiskey. It's also as clear as vodka. Where it gets all of its coloring is from the barrels. Now, whiskey must be aged in barrels for a limited amount of time. We'll be getting into that, how much time legally it must be in the barrels. It's actually different depending on what type of whiskey. And so it must be barrel-aged before it can be sold as whiskey. Now, I'm first going to start off with Canadian whiskey before we talk about American whiskey, mainly because American whiskey has so many different subcategories that it's going to take a while to get through them all. So I'd like to get the Canadian whiskey out of the way at this point. The first whiskey distillery in Canada was in Quebec City in 1769. Scottish immigrants brought the knowledge of making whiskey to Canada. This is why whiskey in Canada, as well as in Scotland, is spelled W-H-I-S-K-Y. Now, the Irish and the Americans spell whiskey with an E-Y instead. On a side note, Canada went through their own prohibition in 1916 and 1970, when alcohol could only be used for medicinal and scientific purposes. Now, Canadian whiskey is made with corn, rye, wheat, and barley, corn being the most dominant. Still, none of these grains can be more than 50% of the mix. Canadian distilleries prefer aging in barrels that have already been used to age bourbon, sherry, or brandy. It is blended, light-bodied, with more delicate flavors than American whiskey. It's my opinion that due to these delicate flavors, Canadian whiskey is great for making mixed drinks that required whiskey. A few common Canadian whiskeys are Crown Royal, Seagram's VO, and Canadian Club. Now, here are a few recipes using Canadian whiskey. The first recipe is the Crown Royal Special Reserve Martini. Now, this comes from Crown Royal's website, not directly from me. It's hard for me to call anything a martini that isn't either gin or vodka. And even if I say martini, I'm going to mean gin. If I'm even talking about a vodka martini, I'm going to specify vodka. I'm just old-fashioned that way. So the recipe for the Crown Royal Special Reserve Martini, according to their website, is 1 ounce of Crown Royal Special Reserve, half an ounce of Grand Marnier, pour it into a shaker filled with ice, shake it, strain it into a cocktail glass. Another drink that normally uses Canadian whiskey is the Washington Apple. Now, you can do this as a shot or as a rocks drink over ice. If you're doing this drink over ice, I'd probably cut down on the amount of whiskey just a bit. pour one part Canadian whiskey and one part cranberry juice, and float apple pucker. When I need to float a liquid on top of a drink, I like to put my bar spoon upside down on top of the drink, or on top of the ice, the liquid basically, and pour over the convex side of the spoon. That'll allow the liquid to slowly spread over the top of the drink, and that's how you get your float. Canadian whiskey is also great to use for whiskey sour because of its delicate flavor. A whiskey sour dates back to 1880, with lemon juice being added for sourness and simple syrup being added to calm it down. Pour into a shaker filled with ice 2 ounce whiskey, 3/4 ounce lemon juice, and 1 ounce simple syrup. Shake and strain into a chilled sour glass. Yes, there's actually a glass made just for sours. Garnish with an orange wheel and a cherry. Now I'm going to take a quick break here. I feel like I'm running a little over time. I want to try to keep my episodes under 30 minutes, and we still have to get to bourbon. So let me go ahead and make this quick. We're going to do a quick break, throw in that famous quote, and as soon as we get back, we'll dive into American whiskey. When I read about the evils of drinking, I gave up reading. Henny Youngman. Now, how's that for a quick break? Trying to keep this show moving. So next I'm going to speak about American whiskey. Now, there are different types of American whiskey. Rye, bourbon, blended, straight, sour mash, and Tennessee. Rye whiskey must be distilled from a mash containing at least 51% rye. Rye whiskeys are not very common. An example of rye whiskey would be Old Overholt. Now, Tennessee whiskey is similar to bourbon, which I'll get to shortly, but Tennessee whiskey is filtered through maple charcoal. It's only made in Tennessee. It must be made of at least 51% of one type of grain. Jack Daniel's is probably the most commonly known Tennessee whiskey. Now, here's an interesting fact. The Jack Daniel's distillery burns sugar maple wood to make their charcoal. The interesting part is that they go through 10 gallons of 140 proof whiskey a week just to start the fire. Jack Daniel's lets every bit of their whiskey soak through 10 feet of charcoal. This procedure can take up to 10 days for every drop of the whiskey to make its way through the charcoal and drip out the bottom. Straight whiskey is any grain whiskey that has not been blended with other whiskey or neutral alcohol. Thus, blended whiskey is at least 20% straight whiskey mixed with neutral alcohol. These blends can have up to as 20 single malt whiskeys or more to make one blend. Now, here's an interesting fact. If you just ask for a whiskey on the East Coast, they tend to pour blended whiskeys. If you ask for just a whiskey on the West Coast, they tend to pour bourbon. And speaking of bourbon, that's the final whiskey I need to talk about for the American whiskeys. A Baptist minister named Elijah Craig first introduced bourbon in Georgetown, Kentucky in the late 18th century. Now, this was Bourbon County. Since this is the area where all the whiskey distilleries started setting up shop, they'd ship their whiskey barrels down the rivers to New Orleans. The barrels were stamped bourbon for the county they were coming from. And this is how the whiskey got its name, bourbon. Bourbon County used to be bigger than it is today, but that changed in 1972 when Kentucky became a state. Now check this out. Talk about irony. Bourbon County never repealed the Prohibition Act. And to this day, they still prohibit consumption alcohol. Corn was plentiful in Kentucky, much more than rye. This is why bourbon contains anywhere from 51% up to 79% corn. Bourbon is a straight whiskey, so it has no other additives other than the water used to dilute it. Bourbon must be distilled up to 160 proof and be aged at least 2 years in American charred oak barrels. Now, most bourbons are aged a lot longer than that. Here's an interesting thing about these charred oak barrels. This is where all the color comes from. When they char the inside of a barrel, you get that black charcoal. And if you were to cut the barrel in half, you would see the black charcoal on the inside. You would then see a very thin line of caramelized wood. It'd be red in color. And this is where that caramel, sweeter flavor comes from the wood, as well as a lot of that coloring, that caramel color you see. If you were to cut open a barrel after it's been used from aging bourbon, you would actually be able to see how far the bourbon soaked into the barrel. From the inside, you have the charcoal. You'll see the red coloring for the caramelization. And then you'll see where the whiskey actually went all the way through the barrel. Not all the way to the outside, luckily, but halfway through it. And that's where basically all the color comes from. Now, you know how I said that American and Irish whiskey spell theirs with an EY, and Scottish and Canadian whiskey spell theirs with just a Y? There's always an exception to the rule. Maker's Mark, for instance, is a bourbon, but they follow the Scottish tradition and spell it with just a Y. They leave the E out. Another interesting fact about Maker's Mark is that they don't use rye at all. They use wheat instead of rye. Rye is an important ingredient to most whiskeys because the more rye you have, the more spice notes to the whiskey. And a little bit of rye goes a long way. Maker's Mark decides to not use any rye at all. And considering it's one of my favorite bourbons, I tend to like it that way. On a side note, did you know that Abraham Lincoln was born in Bourbon County? And by the time he became president, he had a liquor license and actually operated several taverns. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Here are some special recipes that commonly use American whiskey. Now, these are basically blended or bourbon. One of my favorite drinks using whiskey is the Presbyterian. Now, I've already mentioned this in my introductory show, but since I can't stand that show, I thought I'd go ahead and mention it here. Yes, I was seriously reading from a script word for word on episode 1. I gotta tell you, it's a very strange thing when you're doing your first podcast. You're in a room by yourself, there's nobody around, and you're just talking to your computer. It's very difficult to actually imagine that you're speaking to a large audience, at least the first time you do this. It's now starting to become a lot easier. You actually start to believe there's actually an audience listening to you, especially when you're getting as much feedback as I've been getting, which I highly appreciate. So if you want to get a good laugh, you want to hear it for comic relief, go ahead and check out the introductory show. And you'll get the Presbyterian, the recipe, as well as a little bit of history from there. But real quick, I'm going to mention the Presbyterian. It's called Press for short. And in a small tumbler, you can fill it with ice, pour in 1.5 ounce of whiskey, and then fill it half with ginger ale and half with club soda. Now, you can use 7-Up if you don't have ginger ale, but it was originally made with ginger ale. So probably one of the most common whiskey drinks is the Manhattan. Now, the Manhattan was first created at a banquet celebrating the prosecution of the infamous Tweed Ring in 1870 and honoring the lawyer who did the prosecuting, Samuel Tilden. And the banquet was being held by Lady Jenny Churchill. Now, this is one of those drinks where you could use Canadian whiskey, but for a top-notch Manhattan, a bourbon is recommended. In a tumbler filled with ice, pour in 2 ounce bourbon, 1 ounce sweet vermouth, and a dash of Angostura bitters. Shake and strain into a cocktail glass and garnish with a cherry. Now, if you like vermouth, you can try making what's called a perfect Manhattan, which means basically it has sweet and dry vermouth. So instead of using a full ounce of sweet vermouth, use only 1/2 ounce, and then add 1/2 ounce of dry vermouth as well. Shake and strain that, and use a lemon peel for garnish instead of a cherry. Now, basically, the way I like to do my garnishing is for vodka, martinis and regular martinis, I'll use an olive, unless someone requests the a lemon peel instead. For the brown liquors, like the Manhattans, I use, if you're using just sweet vermouth, then you'll go with a cherry. If you're doing a perfect, then you will use a lemon peel. Now, the only exception to that rule would be something like a Southern Comfort Manhattan, where Southern Comfort is a whiskey that's pretty much already sweetened. So when you're making a Southern Comfort Manhattan, you're going to add dry vermouth instead of sweet because it's already sweetened. And then you'll use a lemon twist, mainly because since it's already sweet and you're adding dry vermouth, it's considered like a perfect. Now, the John Collins was briefly mentioned in the gin episode, so for time constraints, I'm pretty much going to skip it. If you go to the gin episode and listen to how to make the Tom Collins, basically just replace the gin with whiskey and you have a John Collins. I'll also have that recipe on the blog. The last drink I'm going to mention is the Old Fashioned. It is said that the drink was created in the 1880s by a customer who always ordered his drink the same way at the Pendennis Club in Louisville, Kentucky. Now, it's customary to name a new drink after the patron who first ordered it, but the bartender decided to name this drink the Old Fashioned in honor of the Angostura that's used in it. Basically, Angostura is a centuries-old ingredient that I'm sure I'm going to talk about in a future episode. Now, this drink can cause all kinds of debate. It's kind of like a martini, where you think everyone has their own idea of how much dry vermouth you should use. This kind of has the same kind of debates. Everybody has a different way of doing the muddling or what you mix in it. Basically, the debates come around from, should you muddle the cherry and the orange, or just the cherry, or just the orange? If you do muddle them, should you leave them in the glass? Should you only use them as garnish? As well as, do you use club soda? If so, how much? There's all kinds of rules. Everyone seems to have their own ways of doing it. So I'm sure after I post this, I'll just sit back and wait for some emails to show up about how somebody probably didn't like the way I gave the recipe. But this is going to be my opinion on how I like to do the Old Fashioned. So you can use it as a starting point and then decide to make it any way you'd like to make it. Just try it around different ways and find the way you like it. So in an old-fashioned glass, is it funny the name of the glass is old-fashioned? The old-fashioned glass, muddle 1 teaspoon of sugar, 2 dashes of Angostura bitters, an orange wedge, a cherry, and a splash of club soda. Now, if you have your handy simple syrup, you can use that instead of the teaspoon of sugar, and you also don't need to add the splash of club soda, basically because the club soda is used just to dissolve the sugar. But in simple syrup, since it's already dissolved, you don't need it. Now, after you're finished muddling this, remove the orange rind. Now pour in 2 ounces of whiskey, and then fill the glass full of ice. If it's too strong, just the way it is, you may want to top it off with some more soda water. But just don't use too much, because you can quickly kill the various flavors in this drink. I also like to garnish this drink with another small wedge of orange and a cherry. It's just kind of a way of topping it off and kind of letting people know this is the flavors you taste inside the whiskey. All right, before I wrap things up, I'd actually like to finish off with a final email that I actually just received today. I'll be honest with you, this entire episode was recorded on Saturday the 4th, and I'm now recording this little bit on Monday the 6th, and I'm plan on posting this entire episode on Tuesday the 7th. I always try to post my shows by Tuesday night so that it's available for Wednesday. That's my time frame that I like to try to get my weekly show out there. I was planning on, just letting the show go, and I was going to mention all the rest of some of the good listener feedbacks I've received on next week's show on the Whiskey Part 2, But I just received this one, and I gotta tell you, this is probably one of the best emails I've received yet. Some of the best questions I've received, and it's kind of stumping me. So I'm actually calling out to everybody out there who listens to the show, especially all your bartenders. I know there's lots of you out there. I've been getting quite a bit messages from you guys. So here's a good question. Kimberly emailed me, stating that she's getting kind of bored with Cosmos. She's also noticing that her palate is changing. She doesn't like how sweet a lot of drinks have become. But at the same time, she doesn't like drinks strong like the normal martini, or basically anything too dry. Also, her boyfriend, who hails from Austria, is searching for a good, suitable guy drink to have as a pre-dinner option to beer and wine. Now, in the email, it sounds like they're both really interested in finding a drink that is in a cocktail glass. The big question, I'll just jump right to it. The big question in this entire email that jumped out at me was, can you make any vodka-based cocktail suggestions that avoid being too sweet yet too dry and still remain socially correct for a man? Basically, they would like to have a drink, or her boyfriend would like to have a drink that he can have it with his clients at an upscale restaurant and basically make it socially correct for a man. Unfortunately, with today's society, there is certain standards that, you know, a lot of drinks in a cocktail glass are considered girly, especially those that are multiple colors with the juices that may be added to them, especially things like the Cosmos or considered to be girly. I've received, I don't know how many emails from people talking about chick drinks or girly drinks. Some people asking for more options other than the Cosmo for a girly drink. Some people asking what is an option not to have a girly drink, like this one here. So the thing is, they really like vodka. So I'm seriously trying to think of what kind of drinks they could try that you would consider okay, manly in today's society's terms. I say it that way because I really don't look at it that way. If you like a good drink, drink it. I love all kinds of drinks. I'll drink anything. I don't care if you think it's girly or not. If whatever kind of drink I want, if I want a Cosmo, I'm going to have a Cosmo. I thought of a few drinks. Basically, when I think of a drink that society considers manly, I think of the martini, either a gin martini or a vodka martini. I also think Manhattan, but that's whiskey-based. I also think of a sidecar, but that's brandy-based. I also mentioned, you know, as I've already mentioned a couple of my episodes, including this one, I love the Maker's Mark Press. But now that's served on the rocks. So trying to answer this question, the main things I can come up with is a vodka gimlet. It's quite tangy with a tangy lime flavor. It's quite clear in color, but it's a greenish tint. Mainly I'm thinking any drink that a man might want to have in a martini glass should either be clear or somewhat translucent, with just a bit of color. Now, you could also go with a dark brown if you're thinking of like the whiskey drinks, but I'm trying to focus on vodka, just trying to follow the questions that they sent me. So other than that, I can think of a citrus martini. If you actually have someone make a lemon-flavored vodka and put in a dash of Grand Marnier, maybe some fresh lime juice, shake and strain that into a cocktail with a lemon twist, that would be really good. Possibly a nutty martini. Well, I hate the name of this because I don't consider it a real martini, but maybe a nutty cocktail, we'll call it that, which is basically vodka, maybe, at, you know, you'll add a splash of Frangelico to it. It'll have somewhat of a nutty flavor to it. This is really stumping me. I would think a lot of drinks with vodka that you may want to be at an upscale restaurant and think it's a manly drink. I come up with either, you know, vodka tonic, Greyhound, Black Russian, Vodka Collins, a Moscow Mule, something along those lines. But those are all pretty much served on the rocks or, you know, basically in ice. So I want to throw this question out to all of you. I'm really interested in knowing what you guys think. Do you have a recipe that's or a cocktail that you think is okay for a man to drink. Now, I know I don't need a lot of emails saying, I think men should be able to drink anything, because I believe that. I'm not saying that's the case. But there is, if you think you're out on a business trip, you're doing a sales meeting, you want to have a good drink, what would you recommend? So feel free to give me a call at 206-9-THE-BAR. Give me your name and tell me what you think. Give me your recipe ideas, your drink ideas, and I may just throw it on next week's show. We'll do a whole collage of everyone's thoughts and ideas and see what we can do to help Kimberly and her boyfriend out. Now, if you don't want to call in, you just want to send it via email, you can definitely do that too. Go ahead and just send it on over to behindthebarshow@gmail.com, and I will read it for you. So I was really happy for being able to do this entire show and actually keep it at 30 minutes, but with this new little addition that I decided to drop into the end of the entire show, I'm definitely over now. But I felt like this was really worth it. I really enjoyed the email. Thank you, Kimberly. So let's go ahead and get back to the ending of the show here so we can finish this up. So I think that's about it for part one of Whiskey. Tune in next week when we complete the whiskey discussion with Irish and Scottish whiskey. As I always say, until next time, cheers, drink responsibly, and remember, don't drink and drive.